Hi, I'm Joel Garcia. Welcome to the Pop Culture Shuffle. On today's show, I have a few things to talk about. First up, we're talking about the CW. Sort of. Then, I talk about the upcoming revival of King of the Hill. And finally, my very brief thoughts on making a top 10 list. But first, let's talk some television. Today I wanted to discuss a channel I have occasionally joked about, the CW. Depending on where you live, you may have noticed one or two new things about the channel. Either it is now on a different station in your region, or the abrupt shift in programming. Gone are the days of superheroes, teen dramas, and whatever the hell Riverdale was. Now, the network airs a mixture of foreign shows, F-Boy Island, and sports. Also Superman and Lois, just to confuse anyone still watching. Most of these changes are due to the network's new majority owner, Nexstar Media Group, who acquired majority control from Paramount and Warner Bros. Discovery, whose respective predecessors CBS and Time Warner formed the network following the merger of UPN and the WB back in 2006. I could go on and on about the network, but that is a topic for another day. We will come back to Nexstar in a bit, but I wanted to start by bringing up something much more localized. The CW's presence in San Diego. For most of us, we might have grown up in a place where a TV station has maintained the same network affiliation for many years. Some might be aware of a station which has switched affiliations either within the past few years or long ago. Affiliation switches can happen for a wide range of reasons, such as ownership changes, another station paying more for the affiliation, or in one very rare extreme case, the NFL. The latter infamously occurred in the early 90s, when Fox acquired the rights to air NFL games, leading to nationwide affiliate switches at the detriment of both CBS and ABC. Here in San Diego, such switches have been relatively rare. Nearly every single broadcast network has jumped around one or two stations, such as ABC and NBC, but only once around every other decade. A notable exception to this ordeal is CBS, which has been on KMFMB Channel 8 ever since it launched back in the late 1940s. Then there's the CW, which has aired on not one, not two, not even three, but four different stations in its relatively short existence. Of course, that count does not include their direct predecessors, the WB and UPN. The former miraculously stayed on one station for its entire existence. The latter jumped around two stations, and at one point had no affiliate in San Diego. You might be wondering, why the CW has jumped around town so much? Strangely, it mostly has to do with the first of the four stations I'm going to highlight. The first station to broadcast a CW was KSWB 69. Which nicely broadcast on cable channel 5. It had the shortest run with the network, ironically after having aired the WB from its launch in 1995 to its closure in 2006. During the summer of 2008, after less than 2 years with the network, the station dropped the CW and picked up Fox, becoming Fox 5 San Diego, albeit with the call sign still referring to KSWB, as in San Diego Warner Brothers. This leads us to the CW's second station, XETV 6. If you're wondering why that call sign starts with an X and not a K or even a W, that's because it's a TV station based in Tijuana, Mexico, just across the border. The station is owned by Televisa, one of Mexico's biggest TV conglomerates, and a sister channel to their local flagship, XCWT-12. Unlike other Mexican stations, it used to fully broadcast in English, save for mandatory government public service announcements and the Mexican national anthem. On a personal note, once while on vacation in San Diego, I stayed up late to theater sign-on, which consisted of said anthem, followed immediately by the Star Spangled Banner and bilingual station identification. Fun fact, the station's English identification was narrated by John St. John, well known to video game fans as the voice of Duke Nukem and Sonic the Hedgehog's Big the Cat. I fondly remember XCTV, especially during their time as a Fox affiliate. I had a close relative of mine who would tape the many cartoons they aired during the 90s, such as Garfield and Friends, and send them back home to my brothers and I to enjoy. They were technically on the radio, as Analog Channel 6 could also be heard on 87.7 FM. I vividly recall once listening to the end of a NASCAR race airing on Fox in my dad's old Chevy Suburban. I should know that I applied to work at XCTV several times. I even got to be interviewed for a job a couple of times at their studios. While the signal was based in Tijuana, their studios were up in Kearny Mesa. I remember being told how they were technically broadcasting two different feeds. The over-the-air antenna feed ran the aforementioned PSAs, while a unique cable and satellite feed switched them out for local English ads. Going back to the channel itself, it underwent many affiliate switches throughout the decades. It went from being an independent to an ABC affiliate to an independent again to a launch Fox affiliate, and ultimately the CW in 2008. In 2017, after 9 years, the CW chose not to renew their agreement with XCTV. As for why, it was reportedly the same reason why the station previously lost both their affiliations with ABC and Fox. Long story short, they were a Mexican station broadcasting an American network. Once XCTV lost to CW, Televisa shut down its English operations, converting the channel into an affiliate of Canal 5, one of their national networks. Ironically, Canal 5 also happens to air a lot of the same content that used to air on either the CW or Fox. And in any given day, you could see reruns of Malcolm in the Middle, Arrow, and even The Loud House. As to where the CW moved yet again, it was surprisingly the aforementioned KFMB. To be more specific, KFMB DT2, which broadcasts on digital channel 8.2, and would subsequently take over XCTV's cable designation of Channel 6. SID Channel, known as the CW San Diego, has complemented its network programming with local sports coverage, extended local news from CBS8, and even My Network TV. Long story short, they picked up that affiliation and aired it overnight. It also airs CBS programming when Channel 8 is in the midst of breaking news or live network programming. For example, the first half hour of Face the Nation airs on CBS 8, but the second half hour airs on the CW San Diego due to CBS starting their live sports coverage around that time. The only time KMFMB has refused to air something broadcast by the CW has been LIB Golf, the controversial golfing association, being one of only a handful of affiliates to not air it at all. I'm not going to delve much more into LIB Golf, but I will say it is being broadcast in San Diego. This leads me to the CW's fourth, and maybe future station, KUSI. The station, which broadcasts over the air on channel 51.1 and cable channel 9, has been an independent for most of its existence. It was a launch affiliate of the CW's other direct predecessor, UPN, airing the network for 3 years. The station is well known for its expansive local news coverage, which has occasionally delved into controversy. They also air a wide range of local programming, most notably the Prep Pigskin Report, which highlights local high school football teams throughout San Diego County. They also air syndicated college football games produced by The Griot. A few months ago, the aforementioned Nexstar acquired KUSI, making it a sister station to the aforementioned Fox 5. Long story short, they bought the company that owned Fox 5, and now they own both. The company's plan is to eventually convert KUSI into a CW affiliate once the network's current agreement with KMFMB expires. This whole situation feels awkward as it involves three local TV stations on the verge of massive change. In fact, it has already begun for KUSI. Following the acquisition, they stopped airing their hourly newscasts, which would often run for around 1 to 2 minutes at the top of the hour. Frankly, that was a good cut, as while it makes sense to air a news brief in the middle of the afternoon, it makes much less sense to air one at 2 in the morning. Other noticeable changes have included Gulls Minor League Hockey, which previously aired on Fox 5, Clipper Games simulcast on sister station KTLA 5, and daily airings of the Localist SD, a local program which highlights things to do around San Diego. More changes are sure to be abound. Consolidation is a possibility, as I doubt Nexstar would maintain two separate newscasts and teams within the same TV market in the long term. I say this because a similar thing occurred to my hometown TV stations in the Imperial Valley. Long story short, the CBS and NBC affiliates eventually merged into a single station, with the only major difference now being their use of their respective networks' news packages. The biggest mystery is KMFMB's secondary digital channel. Their situation could best be described as being a lame duck. By that I mean, KMFMB knows they will eventually lose the CW affiliation, but for now continue to fulfill their contractual obligation to air the network and use its branding. They may still have My Network TV in the foreseeable future, but that quote-unquote network has been nothing but reruns of NBC dramas and Dateline. Who knows if that will even be around in the future? Ironically, the station least impacted by this whole ordeal? Fox 5 San Diego. In the foreseeable future, the CW San Diego is available to watch over the air on digital channel 8.2 and cable channel 6. KUSI News is available over the air on digital channel 51.1 and cable channel 9. As for Fox 5 San Diego, it can be seen over the air on digital channel 69.1 and cable channel 5. The following segment about King of the Hill was originally recorded back in February. A few major events have happened since then when it comes to this production, namely the passing of another star. However, the recording is still evergreen enough that I chose not to re-record the whole thing, save for an addendum at the end. With that said, enjoy my early thoughts on the show's revival announcement. So, King of the Hill is coming back. For those unaware, King of the Hill is a long-running anime series about Hank Hill and his family and friends living in the small town of Arlen, Texas. The show focuses on Hank's conservative values clashing with that of his boggle-loving wife Peggy, their wacky son Bobby, and free-spirit niece Luann. In addition, he hangs out with his lifelong pals Dale Gribble, a conspiracy nut, Army Barber Bilbo Treib, and Boomhauer. The show ran for 13 seasons from 1996 to 2009 on Fox, being the first adult anime series to successfully take advantage of airing alongside The Simpsons. There were others, but they mostly tended to fail after a season or two. For example, has anyone ever heard of Capital Critters or The Critic? The show was created by Mike Judge and Greg Daniels. The former is also known for MTV's Beavis and Butthead, while the latter worked on the American remake of The Office, as well as Parks and Recreation. King of the Hill stood out from other anime series by being relatively grounded. Whereas on The Simpsons, you'd have Homer working at a nuclear power plant, but also go to space, Hank never strayed far from his work at Strickland Propane, where he sold propane and propane accessories. Even today, there are not that many realistic adult anime series. And by that I mean shows which don't try to simply rip off Family Guy by having a talking baby or animal. The closest I have seen to try and replicate the formula was the short-lived Bless the Hearts. It even featured Megalomart, a Walmart parody prominently seen on King of the Hill, implying both shows took place within the same universe. Presumably, had the show not been cancelled after two seasons, there might have been a crossover in the future. And before you bring up BoJack Horseman, the main character's a fucking horse! You might be wondering why the show ended back in 2009. Three words: The Cleveland Show. At the time, Fox's animation lineup consisted of The Simpsons, King of the Hill, Family Guy, and American Dad. And while normally Fox Sunday occupies 3 hours, the first hour tends to be, well, a buffer for the Fox network, where essentially they mostly air reruns because, of course, there's always the high possibility that it might get preempted due to either NASCAR, football, or some other sporting event. So when it came time for the Cleveland Show to premiere on Fox, Hank Hill was put on the chopping block. The show had an unceremonious farewell, airing its series finale, The Sirloin with Love, at the end of the summer, the week before the Cleveland Show premiered. It was left with 4 unaired episodes, which would later premiere in syndication. Most fans tend to place the blame on the Cleveland Show, which is understandable, yet the show was already on a decline. Aside from the series finale, I can't recall a single good episode from that final season. It felt like the show didn't know where to take the characters outside of giving Luann and her husband Lucky a baby. The show seemed to be aware of this, because in one of its final episodes, Dale freaks out and says they've run out of things to do. That is not to say I feel the revival will be terrible. By the show's final season, Judge and Daniels had long left production, the former only voicing his characters, and the latter having moved on to The Office. Both will thankfully return for the revival, even though they're already working on other productions. In Judge's case, he's also working on the revival of Beavis and Butthead that has been pretty funny. Before it comes to Hulu, however, the show has to resolve a few issues. The biggest one involves the aforementioned Luann and Lucky, who in the show eventually got married and had a kid in the final season. The duo was originally voiced by Brittany Murphy and singer Tom Petty, both of whom sadly passed away since the show originally ended. Depending on what direction the show could take, they could either recast the roles or simply write the two out. Either way, the show would also have to explain what happened to Gracie, the aforementioned daughter born during the final season. A similar issue will be dealt when it comes to Khan, who in the show was Hank's Laotian neighbor that tended to complain about everything he does. It was often the cranky neighbor who got upset with Hank and his friends and often enjoyed mocking them as hillbillies and rednecks. He was originally voiced by Toby Huss, who also voiced Hank's bitter old dad, Cotton. Now, the problem comes down to the fact that Huss is white. Nowadays, a white actor playing a person of color is frowned upon and heavily avoided. Within the past few years, several animated shows, especially those either produced or broadcast by Disney, have recast characters originally voiced by white actors with people of color. This is notably included the aforementioned Cleveland over on Family Guy, with the original voice actor willingly stepping down from the role. At the moment, nothing has been said about Khan's involvement in the revival. However, the announcement did state that Lauren Tom would be back, and if you're unaware who she voiced on the show, she voiced both the character's wife and daughter, Min and Connie. When it comes to the show's direction for the revival, that is a whole other story. If I recall correctly, around 2017, it was said the revival could have a time skip to now focus on Bobby as an adult. That premise could help explain away why the aforementioned three characters might no longer be around, yet I feel it would simply turn Bobby into Hank and Gracie into Luann. Right now, it appears the show will simply pick up where it left off, as Pam at Lawn, the longtime voice of Bobby, is also coming back. That is probably the best way for the show to return, even if it does deviate from the show's grounded setting. I feel like the show will do the exact same thing as The Proud Family, Louder and Prouder, a similar revival series over on Disney+. When that show came back, it simply aged up the characters and moved on as if nothing had happened. If the revival does start with a time skip, I would like to see if they finally answer a few questions that were left unresolved. Will Dale find out John Redcorn is Joseph's biological father? Will Hank reunite with Iris' older brother Junichiro or little brother Good Hank? Do Bobby and Connie get together or meet other people? And of course, since when was Boomhauer a Texas Ranger? Regardless of what happens, I can't wait to see Hank, Dale, Bill, and Boomhauer get back together for another beer. Since then, I recall seeing some promotion for the reruns at Hulu's Comic-Con event, but updates slow to a crawl due to the dual actors and writer strikes, at least until August. As I said at the start, yet another one of the original voice actors sadly passed away. The voice of Dale Gribble, Johnny Hardwick, died this past August at the age of 64. He did manage to reprise the character for at least two episodes, so Dale will be back in the revival, albeit briefly. Like with both Luann and Lucky, the show will eventually have to decide what to do with his character. There's also a small update to the aforementioned situation involving Khan and Toby Huss. Back in November, during an interview with TV Line, Greg Daniels said he did not know if the character would come back, adding that if he did, he would likely be recast. Daniels also stated they only worked on those two aforementioned episodes before the strikes, and that the revival might premiere in 2025. Considering all the changes currently taking place at Hulu, such as Disney fully acquiring the service from Comcast, it might wind up premiering on Disney+ instead. In fact, in some countries, the show already streams on Disney+. Since it will be a while until the revival premieres on either Hulu or Disney+, or both, King of the Hill is available to stream on both services. The show is also available to own, if you can find it, on DVD and Blu-ray. Finally, the other day, while responding to comments on TikTok, I was asked at one point if I had a top 10 of my favorite films. It made me think for a moment if that were even possible for me to consider. I know top 10s are prevalent online, with several influencers and certain channels building their entire business on the concept. Some go even further by having top 15s, top 40, or even a top 100. Late night legend David Letterman famously had his top 10 lists, which I liked, especially because number 1 was overall meaningless, as it was the last thing he said before the band played him out. And of course, there's also, for most people of my generation, TRL and their top 10 videos. I, however, can't come up with a top 10 of my favorite films. I like many films from a wide range of eclectic genres. One would be surprised to find out that I enjoy both The Godfather and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie. I also like Malcolm X in The Dark Knight as much as both Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter and Something Borrowed. Even if I were to get specific and bring up, say, a top 10 of my favorite superhero films, it would presumably be dominated by Batman and maybe something random like X2, X-Men United. I also find it difficult to rank my favorite films, not because I have so many to consider, but also because my thoughts on certain films can change at any time. I recall leaving the theater liking Disney's Aladdin remake, only to then spend the next day telling others about its many flaws and my overall disappointment with that film. By contrast, I hated James Cameron's Titanic the first time I saw it, but after multiple viewings, eventually grew to like it. I just don't want to make a top 10 of films I like at a certain moment of time, only to then reconsider it later on. To bring up a good comparison, it's like how everyone hated the Star Wars prequel trilogy when it came out, only to now call it a masterpiece all these years later. I don't, but you get my point. As for a personal example, when I was a kid, I remember enjoying The Land Before Time and three of the sequels on VHS. Nowadays, I have no interest in seeing those films again, or catching up with that franchise's 10 other sequels. I really can't consider adding them to a hypothetical top 10 of childhood films if I haven't seen them since then. That is not to say it will be difficult for me to come up with a list of films from a specific genre. If someone were to ask for my favorite non-Disney animated theatrical films, they would be Studio Ghibli's The Cat Returns, Don Bluth's Anastasia, How to Train Your Dragon 2, The Rugrats Movie, and, shockingly, Quest for Camelot. Fun fact, Celine Dion's The Prayer originated from Quest for Camelot. Within the film, it was badly placed in a chase scene. In short, I may not be a top 10 guy, but I can happily tell you my favorite films from any specific genre, style, or decade. Except for maybe westerns. That is all the time we have for today's show. If you would like to know when the next episode comes out, remember to follow or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite stream provider. You can also follow me on TikTok at Mr. Joel Garcia, as well as at Mr. Joel Garcia 9 on Threads, Instagram, and Twitter/X. Until next time, thank you for listening and happy holidays.